happy mess. Celebrate your magic in the middle of life's messes. Hot, happy
mess.
I'm Zuri Hall, and this is Hot, happy mess.
Oh, shoot.
Hey, guys, it's happy. I'm tired. Can you tell I'm tired? You know what? Screw it. Producer Star, just keep it all in because it's the truth. It is the truth. It's a hot mess Monday, y'all, in case you couldn't tell. It's the long weekend, and I am officially on vacation. There is a very special event that we have been cooking up for you with the Black Effect Podcast Network, and I've got a few more details to share, okay? So last week, I teased the top secret event that's going down, and it's time to give you more details. If you are into doing the inner and outer work, and you want the tools to create balance and manifest happiness, and I know you do because you're listening to Hot Happy Mess. Hello. Then we have a very cool, unique experience just for you. And I wanted to share it with everyone who wants to join. Coming very, very soon, the Black Effect Podcast Network is hosting a virtual event with myself, Zuri Hall, and the super lovely, awesome, wonderful Devi Brown of the Dropping Gems podcast. And this event is especially for BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month, okay? That's Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. For those of y'all who are like, what's BIPOC? If you ain't know, then it might not be your Mental Health Awareness Month, but that's what it's to celebrate, okay? And it's going to be freaking amazing. All are welcome. So come one, come all. But it is certainly to raise awareness for this month, which is so important. More details are coming soon, so make sure y'all tune in weekly to the podcast and follow at Hot Happy Mess on Instagram to stay in the loop. Soon you can get your tickets and go get all of that goodness. All right, now before we hop in today's episode on how to network without being a stalker, because Lord knows I have felt like a stalker in the past trying to network. I'm no good at it. Socially awkward when it comes to that stuff. Before we dive into that, I want to announce another giveaway. That's right. I am gifting a $100 Amazon gift card. That's $100. And the only requirement is you leave a 5-star rating and a quick written review. I'm talking about a minute, okay? 60 seconds of your time, you can win $100. It's really easy. All you have to do is leave a 5-star rating with a quick written review, literally like 2 sentences will do it. Your favorite thing about the podcast, what you love, I don't care, as long as you leave it. And then leave your Instagram or your Twitter handle so we can contact you if you win. When you win, okay? We are going to manifest a $100 Amazon gift card for you. The giveaway ends July 19th, and I'll be announcing the winner on that Monday's episode. So if you're listening to this before July 19th, take a second right now. Go to the reviews area, particularly if you're on Apple Podcasts. Okay, I don't really know how it goes down on Spotify. And then really quickly, 5-star rating, quick review. What do you love most about Hot Happy Mess? What do you love most about me hosting Hot Happy Mess? I'm not fishing for compliments. I'm fishing for compliments, guys. Just kidding, kind of. So anyways, leave that. May the odds be ever in your favor. Okay, it's time for today's episode. We are talking about how to network without being a stalker, because let's be honest, it is hard AF, okay? So for me networking, people assume I'm way more truly extroverted than I am. So it's hard for me, as I think sometimes people call them extroverted introverts. Sometimes people call them ambiverts, but I'm kind of 50-50 down the middle. So when I'm out and I'm mixing and mingling, I like social situations. I enjoy it. I'm having so much fun, but it does drain me. After I hang out with like more than 5 people in a room for more than 2 hours, like I need to recharge. Alone time recharges me. We're true extroverts. Being around people, engaging, interacting, socializing charges them. It takes it out of me, but I enjoy it. It's like hiking up a mountain. It took it out of me, but I enjoyed it. I'm proud of myself. It was fun, you know? So that's kind of how I felt about networking too, except the added layer of networking is, you know how it just feels so sometimes forced, right? It's like, you don't know me from Joe Schmo, and I'm about to slide in your DMs or send you a cold call or email or whatever and just be like, hi, you don't know me, but help me, basically. And so for a long time, I wasn't really good at networking and I didn't really do it. If there wasn't something organic that popped up professionally, then I just wasn't about that life. I wasn't really the, here, take my number. Here's my card.
Let's workshop this idea over lunch or whatever.
But if there were organic connections and I felt like I actually liked the person and would want to hang out with them anyway, then that was different. But I will say the friends of mine, the acquaintances of mine who are really good at networking, I've always admired it and not completely understood how they do it so effortlessly, because that is not a gift of mine. I never want to come across like I'm using anyone, because I also never want to use anyone. But the older I get and the longer I've been, you know, in this professional space in my industry, and it's the same for any industry or most industries, I would imagine, you realize it's not a bad thing to network. It's a part of the game. It's a part of, you know, business. It's a part of, what do they say? What's the quote? Your network is your net worth. So you really do have to be intentional about those relationships. Don't use people, but it's okay when there's a mutual exchange or it's mutually beneficial. So I'm excited to dive into the networking of it all. In today's episode, we're talking with another expert panel with two awesome women, and we're chatting about LinkedIn, building authentic relationships, because the key is authenticity, right? It becomes way less moochy and usey if you're just being authentic and building those connections, and how to make power moves in male-dominated industries, amongst other things. So first up, we have Lauren McGoodwin. She is Career Contessa's CEO. I love her website, y'all. She's a number one power move advocate and has a life mission to help women build successful and fulfilling careers on their terms. The Career Contessa helps over 2 million women each year with their careers through content, online learning courses, and job listings. Lauren is also the host of Career Contessa's podcast, The Females, a weekly advice podcast focused on women, work, and all the answers to your career questions so you can be more fulfilled, healthy, and successful at work. Most recently, she's released her first book, Power Moves: How Women Can Pivot, Reboot, and Build a Career of Purpose. And next up, we have Leticia. She is the CEO and founder of Bird Career Counseling, a talent development consulting agency serving organizations and top talent at the intersection of career empowerment, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and leadership development. As a certified life and career coach, she loves helping working professionals break through to their career potential. She launched the Career Chasers Members Club, monthly membership, and virtual coaching experience for ambitious women of color who want to land their dream job and create a career they love, with over 600 members in 11 countries and counting and over 20 industries, okay? Leticia is also the host of the Career Chasers podcast, where she shows you how to think of your career holistically, looking at it from all angles as you take charge in discovering a meaningful and purpose-driven career. Here are the experts. All right, so now we are joined by Leticia and Lauren. Super excited to have these ladies with us today. How y'all doing? Hey.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yay. Yes. I'm super excited to have you guys here today because this is one of the things that I am so not good at. Like, I am all about ambition and climbing and working. I am so bad at networking. I'm just awkward. I don't know what to do with my hands. I just break out into cold sweats. So I'm glad that you two are here to help guide us through how to network without feeling like a stalker, because in this day and age, it's really hard not to be able to stalk. I mean, it's so easy to just go online, Google someone. So it's a shame to utilize this new technological age we're in to work for us, you know? So before we jump into the discussion, I would love to know, just to kick things off, a fun little icebreaker. Does either one of you have a most bizarre or awkward networking story? Like, you were trying to shoot your shot, you got dunked on, it was bad. Like, ooh, I'm weird, I'm sorry. Or like someone maybe reaching out to you and it was just cringe.
Oh, I have, I mean, a lot of weird network reach out to me emails.
Yeah.
And you know what's starting to happen too is like, if you don't respond and people will see that you maybe like posted something on Instagram, so it's like they know you're alive. I'm starting to get this thing where people are now like following up very aggressively, or they're like guilt tripping me in the email, or like the subject line was like, I know you're busy and you probably don't want to talk, please just 10 minutes. And I'm like, This was an email from yesterday, you know? So,
need to listen to this episode of Hot Happy Mess so that they can learn how to not be a stalker.
Yeah. And I think for me, in terms of networking, I had lots of weird things where like, I would just like jump right into like the interview style of trying to network with someone versus like trying to naturally get to know them. And I think one of the like kind of embarrassing things is when you've had a one-on-one conversation with someone and they still don't remember you and you have to like keep introducing yourself. I've also had that experience as well. So, Guilt trips are bad. It's embarrassing to not get remembered.
Yes, yes. Keeps us humble, right?
Yes.
Like, I have yeah. four times. But
yeah, you're again, like, we had one-on-one coffee together like a month ago, but it's fine. Don't worry about it.
It's a big deal. No big deal. Leticia, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I'd say for me, kind of like with Lauren's point, when I was younger and just first started out networking, I would definitely jump into the whole like, you know, what are your goals? What's your vision? And now I'm more so like, just tell me about you. Let's just naturally and genuinely get to know each other. But I think it took time for me to get confident with just building relationships. And I think that's like the true key to networking is building relationships and not trying to impress or overcompensate, because I know I've scared people. And I have actually one of my mentors who was texting me just earlier. When I first met her, she's pretty well known in her space. So I was fangirling her and I just approached her and I was like, hey, I'm Leticia. Oh my gosh, I can't believe this is you. Like, and she's like, yeah, I'm going to go over here. And I was like, oh, are you leaving? She was like, no, I'm just like walking away.
Oh, gosh. It hurts. Like, lie to me, please. Just tell me you had to go check on your non-existent baby or something.
I know. But now we're friends. We're cool. It's all right. Good.
Okay. We found our way. We found our way.
We found our way. Yes.
That's all that matters. Well, I'm excited for y'all to share with our Hot Happy Mess audience the keys to authentic relationship building. Because I will say, like, that was my struggle in my 20s. Either I came on way too hard and it was just, what are your goals? These are my goals. Can you help me? Da, da, da. Or they were like, does this girl even speak? Like, does she like any of us here in this room? Like, why is she not talking? But it was mostly me being shy or not wanting to come on too strong. So trying to like find that happy balance of getting to know someone without beating them over the head with getting to know them is the fine line. I've already shared your bios, but I would love for each of you to just give the listeners a little bit more info about just who you are and your why. So Leticia, we can kick it off with you. Your area of expertise, your executive coaching and talent development, but just break it down for us. What exactly do you do in your own words and why do you do it?
Yeah. So, you know, my goal one is to help women, especially women of color, feel seen, heard, and valued in the workplace through coaching. I'm also provide diversity consulting, talent development consulting around recruiting, talent acquisition strategies for companies, mostly tech or startups that really want to provide a safe space. So my mission really in life is to help to provide equitable and safe spaces where all people can thrive and fully be their full authentic selves at work. That's my why. That's what I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. Thinking about women and women of color specifically, we are underpaid. We are undersupported. We're overworked and overlooked. And so everything that I do is really rooted in helping us get to the bag and then find those places where, again, where we can thrive and get paid for the value that we add in. Mm. So
here. Three snaps for that. I love it. I love it. Lauren, I am such a fan of Career Contessa, have been for years at this point. So I'm super excited that you're joining us. Break it down. Talk a little bit about your background. Sort of the pivot for you was interesting. You were a recruiter at Hulu first, right?
Yes. And before that, I was an admin assistant banging my head against the wall. I was in a job that I hated. I dreaded the commute. I cried in the bathroom and did the whole career transition thing, which is where I kind of learned really like the rules of networking. Eventually transitioned into recruiting at Hulu. And it was very eye-opening to go be on the other side of the hiring table, right? You go from being this job searcher, you're trying so hard to get in somewhere, and now you're on the other side where you're listening to people make decisions about who they're going to hire, who is impressive in the interview, what, you know, you're just constantly looking at resumes. And that was really eye-opening to me. And while I was at Hulu, I was also in the process of working on my master's thesis, and I wrote it on millennial women and career resources because it was really eye-opening to me that the millennial generation, we were changing the rules of work. And women specifically, this was the first time that the workplace was going to be have more women in it than ever before. And maybe not right now, but at a point, we were over 50% of the workforce. And the workplace was not built for women, certainly was not built for women of color, basically wasn't built for anybody who wasn't a white male.
Sounds about right.
And so while I was working on my master's thesis, Career Contessa was basically the prototype I was testing out of like, we need a career resource. And And what's interesting is so many people were like, women don't need a career resource. I don't understand. And now, of course, that concept's not new to you. Like, you guys aren't, it doesn't even, you know, boggle your mind of like why women need a place that is speaking specifically to them and talking about the workplace. So Career Contessa is now 7 years old, and our job is to help women be successful and fulfilled in their careers. We try to hit people with advice and resources as much as we can at every type of stage they're at, whether you are job searching, you are trying to figure out your next move, you've taken a break, whatever it is. And I think that's the interesting thing about, women in our careers is that we need resources at all different stages. And it kind of feels like you either get maybe a career center when you're in college, and then after that, you're done. Mm-hmm. You know, and God forbid you change your plans and you opt out for a little bit, or you don't have the choice and you are pushed out for a little bit. And so Career Contessa, you know, everything from a podcast to a book to our, you know, our Instagram, you can learn career tips. And I recently wrote a book called Power Moves, How Women Can Pivot, Reboot, and Build a Career Purpose. And I have an entire section devoted to networking because it matters. It truly is how people get ahead and they get opportunities in their careers.
Absolutely. I actually gave away some copies of Power Moves that I bought for my audience for our episode on pivoting. So if y'all haven't listened to that, go listen to The Art of the Pivot. Let's talk networking. Yeah. We know that networking is important. Some statistic somewhere says 85% of all jobs are filled through networking. I'm just going to trust producer Star on this one. Can't cite the source, but I believe it in my bones. So there's that. I think the answer is obvious though, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on why it's important to network, particularly in the digital age as women.
I mean, I totally believe that stat is true. As a recruiter, a lot of companies literally will pay employees to refer people they know for a job. So that is what companies want. They want referrals from their current employees and people who are entrepreneurs to freelancers to maybe companies that don't even offer that. They want to work with their friends. So networking is a huge piece of how people get jobs. I totally believe that. Do I think networking matters for your career? Absolutely. I am literally a walking statistic of that, in the sense of the way I figured out how to get a job in recruiting or become a recruiter is I started reaching out to recruiters for informational interviews. And just some fun stats for your listeners, I reached out to over 70 recruiters on LinkedIn. Only about 30 of them got back to me to have an informational interview. But it was that networking that helped me make a career transition and get the job. So, you know, it's not always easy. And it's absolutely an art. I think looking back now, there's a lot of mistakes I made, but a mistake I didn't make was I didn't give up. I didn't take no, or literally most people didn't even say no. They just never answered me. I didn't take that as, they were just like, delete. I didn't let that stop me from trying. And I think that's something that happens with networking, is that when people first start reaching out, they're a little feeling like, I don't have anything to offer you. I'm asking for a favor. So the power dynamic is really weird. And then like one wrong move makes them feel like, I can't do this. No one's going to help me. And I just share that story because obviously that's a less than 50% acceptance rate. And that's okay. You know, it is a little bit of,
honestly, hearing you say 30 out of 70, I was like, wow, good for you. That's a really high reply rate.
Also,
I still go back to my old emails and think of all the ones that I got ghosted on just to remind myself of how much traction I've had since then.
You know, it's good that you do that too, just because some days you need that like smile file that reminds you of how far you've come. Like you need to see those initial emails of asking people to give you 20 minutes of their time. But I won't take up the whole time, but I share that because networking is important. But yes, there are definitely like rules of ways to doing it way more successfully. So you don't have to have that high of a rejection rate that I had.
Right. Which I still stand by is a really low rejection rate. Because when I tell you I was left on red 99% of the time. But Leticia, I would love to hear your perspective on one thing that Lauren touched on. She was talking about the fact that, you know, we often, particularly in the beginning phases of our career, for like, well, I don't have anything to offer except maybe a free coffee while I pick your brain. Like the most infamous like phrase, right? When we shoot our shot in these cold emails and cold calls. What is your thought process on that? How do you look at that when we're sort of managing up and we're trying to network and we feel out of our wheelhouse? Why should we do it anyway? And what are your initial sort of tips to managing up when we feel like we don't have anything to offer?
I mean, you know, when you got to look in the mirror and recognize just who you are, right? So I think that's key. Lauren, your story reminds me so much of even my story, because I had started my career in accounting, realized in the first 6 months that I could not look at another spreadsheet, and decided I wanted to move into recruiting. The only, I don't want to say the only reason, but the main reason why I got the job that I did was because of one recruiter that actually became a mentor to me. He helped me with preparing for interviews, reviewing my salary, or reviewing my resume, helping me with salary negotiation. And then after some failed interviews, I was just thinking, I said, well, why don't I just work for him, right? And so I met up with him for lunch, and I said, I want to work for your company. Here, let me tell you why. And I gave him my resume, my cover letter. He kind of laughed like, wow, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, no, I'm serious. Like, please take this. And the next day, one of their recruiters put in their 2-week notice. And he was like, email me the resume that you sent me. And I got the job just like that. And so I fully believe, right? And it was just one recruiter. And I fully believe in the power of networking. I would love to assume that people are genuinely good people. Like, there are good people in the world, right? And the way that I see it is, if you are putting yourself out there, right? I think the biggest thing is we have to, one, learn how to embrace vulnerability, transparency, and like ask for help. And it's not like you're asking for someone to give you $1 million. Maybe you're asking for an introduction. Maybe you are asking for a referral, right? Maybe you're asking them to look at your resume, give you some tips, what have you. But let's say that it works out and you do get a job at their organization. They connect you to someone that can connect you to an opportunity at their org. That only makes them look good. And so I think that's a really positive way to look at it, right? If someone were to reach out and ask me for help, like, genuinely, I am going to want to help them, and I'm going to want to do what I can to make sure that I am able to provide any type of resource or guidance to them. So I think, one, we have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable and getting out of our way and recognize that it definitely is a two-way exchange, right? And I think that, one, showing gratitude, showing appreciation goes a super long way. And it's not so much like a I'm taking, but it's, hey, you're helping me out, and I know I'm going to help you in return. And that's truly the way that I look at it.
I love that perspective of gratitude, right? Because the truth is, and I agree with you, I like to think that people are innately good. There are crappy people.
Well, yeah.
Many of them. But I would like to think that innately we are good. And I know that I have certainly helped people that have reached out to me if I have the time, right? We're all running around. We're busy. We're super crazy. It's like, you want to help and you want to do more than you can. And the truth is, I'm not looking for anything in return. I'm thinking about when I was that like young girl straight out of college, desperate for like 10 minutes of advice from someone I admired or a connection, or for you to just forward my email to the right department or the right person. And that's it. And it feels good to be good and be kind. So I second your perspective on that, Leticia, that you just never know who's willing to extend 5 minutes of grace or 20 minutes of grace. And it could very well change the course of your life. That's happened to me a few times, like just a few minutes of grace that were unexpected have literally brought me to the career that I have now. Someone passed my reel and resume along when they didn't have to, but I emailed them and 20 other people it. They were the only one who forwarded it, but all I needed was one forward. It got into the right hands of the VP of talent, and I suddenly was reaching my goal of national by 25 because that one person extended grace and said, you know what? I've got 10 minutes to help. I'm going to send your email. I'm going to send your reel to the right person. So you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. Yeah. I'm curious to know, in this day and age, obviously we have the digital world, and coming out of the pandemic, we've realized more than ever just how accessible we all are. Like, we knew we had the internet, we knew we had Wi-Fi, but now I feel like I see my coworkers more via Zoom than I did when I was at the office. I'm looking at y'all every day. So what are some things to keep in mind when it comes to making technology work for us. I would love just your top two or three tips for networking in a digital age these days. Lauren?
Well, I think first pick your medium. Not everybody is like looking for you to slide into their DMs on Instagram, you know? And so I usually tell people, if you are even thinking like, is it appropriate to reach out to them, you know, on Twitter or Instagram or whatever other platform, then I would say play it safe and go and add them first as a connection on LinkedIn. That's, you know, the professional network. And even better if you can get their email address, and I'll give you a hot tip. But once you add someone as a connection on LinkedIn, you can hit contact info and get their email address. I prefer that more than LinkedIn messages because, hello, those are overwhelming. Now they allow salespeople to send tons of sales messages. So like, connect with them on LinkedIn, give them a short little message, especially if you don't know who they are, and then take that email and send them something a lot more personal. And that's my first tip on technology is like, just because you can doesn't mean you should, because not everybody is comfortable with that. And so, you know, play it safe when in doubt. My other tip with technology, just thinking about email, is that people are busy, you're right, and they get a lot of emails. Make it very, very easy for a person to say yes. Be upfront about what it is that you want. So in your subject line, you know, informational interview request, you have 20 minutes. The other thing I tell people, I'm like, make it easy for them to say yes. So do not say, oh, Zuri, I'd love to learn more about your career. That's way too open-ended. That is overwhelming. Oh my God,
Lord, I do not want to cut you off. I just have to amplify what you just said. I get so many DMs and emails where they're like, hey, I'd love to just come like hang out and like get lunch with you and just like learn about your life and your career.
No,
and I'm like,
no, as much
as I would love to rehash my entire life, you could just like look it up real quick. Like,
if
you
have something specific,
what can I give you? What do you need?
They can listen to your podcast, read about your career, watch you on TV. Like, that is such a bad use of the 20 minutes of someone's time you have. I say this to people all the time. I'm like, if your question is how I landed a job at Hulu, I've said this ad nauseum. That's a horrible use of the 20 minutes of time you would have with me, for example. So make it easy for them to say yes, but also be really clear on what is your objective. What's your learning goal? If someone reaches out to you, what do they want to learn that they haven't been able to learn in another way? And then tailor it and customize it. Mm-hmm. Make it so that you want to help. You're like, this person knows about me. They're being really smart and they're only asking for 20 minutes of my time via phone call. Please do not ask for us to get coffee, especially during a pandemic, but even before, it's like, it's never a 20 minute coffee. It's an hour coffee, an hour to get there, an hour to get back. And if you live in Los Angeles, it's more like 6 hours. So don't do it. True. And I'm so passionate about this stuff because it's like, just like,
Lauren, I can't tell. Are you passionate about this?
Do
you
feel strongly
about this?
Yeah.
It's not clear.
I just feel like there's so many like easy networking mistakes that people make. And it's like, if you just tweak five of these things, it's going to go so much better. And I do believe that confidence is a muscle, and the more you use it, the stronger it gets. And what I see happen is self-doubt and negativity and a lack of confidence like so quickly takes over people because they sent you an email and they didn't hear back, or they had that informational interview and it went nowhere. And part of this is kind of like their focus on steps 2 and 3, but there's steps, you know, 0 and 1 that you need to really focus on first. Like, what is your learning goal? What do you want to get out of it? You don't need to have 15 learning goals. You need to have one. Make it easy for them to say yes, get in contact with them, follow up with them. And then of course, the more follow up, so we're not that part in the interview, but it's like self-doubt doesn't have to take over in this process. You can feel really good about it really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really great insight. And I want to get into the self-confidence and the feeling good in just a minute. But first, Leticia, give us the goods. What are your do's and don'ts when it comes to networking successfully?
Yeah, I mean, I just love everything that Lauren just said. Literally, it really bothers me when people reach out and they're like, tell me more about what you do and how did you get into this work? And it's like, there's Google, you can go on the site, read my LinkedIn. And I think that brings up a good point too. When you're reaching out to someone, like, be specific as to why you selected or chose that person. If there is some type of commonality, right? Like, that's awesome, right? But I think sometimes we see someone and they're like, and we go, oh, well, they work at this company. Let me just reach out to them, right? But how can you take a look at, maybe it's something about their background. Maybe it's something that they posted online. maybe you have been studying their work, the things that they're talking about, and that really resonates with you. I think it's important to just find a specific reason as to why this person, and not just because, oh, because you work here and you do this, I want to talk to you. I think also too, like managing the relationship when it comes to networking, you know, it's going to be on you to manage that relationship. So making it easy to say yes, following up, right? Asking at the end of the conversation, hey, based on our chat, you know, can you recommend maybe 2 to 3 more people you think that I should be connected with? And then don't just wait for them to pass that contact information along, but also reach out, follow up. And I just think it's so important to manage that relationship, right? Even like putting something on the calendar, maybe it's a week, 2 weeks, a month out, just to say, hey, I just want to check in. Keep notes on people when you network with them. Maybe they're telling you about their pets, right? People love talking about their pets or their children or their birthdays. Like find something else where you can just reach out that's not also related to work, right? Like, hey, I know you have two daughters. One of your daughters is going off to college. Like, hope that she's doing well or hope she had a good transition. I mean, something like that. It goes a long way. So whenever I network, I try to take really, really avid notes and making sure that I am just, even those little small touch points along the way, I think are really helpful to building a genuine relationship.
I love it. Spot on. And I so second that. I'll say, you know, when people reach out to me and they personalize it a little bit, because it's like, okay, is this just the copy and paste email that you're sending every TV host ever? Which is fine, but it also makes it makes me feel way less bad if I don't respond, because I'm like, I can tell everybody's getting that email.
So exactly.
It's like, the stakes aren't that high. When you're like, oh, I'm a Buckeye too, or I went to Ohio State, saw that you did, I'm like, ooh, say less, tell me more. Like, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that tip about personalizing it. One thing I want to kind of circle back around on, Lauren, you briefly mentioned LinkedIn, and these days it's a really great platform to network. It kind of makes it easy. Everyone's on there to do that thing. So it kind of takes the guesswork out of, can I reach out? Can I connect? As of 2021, LinkedIn had more than 740 million members in more than 200 countries, including executives from all of the Fortune 500 companies. Now, of course, we're told by career professionals that LinkedIn is our digital resume and it's the positive digital footprint that we need if we're going to connect with employers, find mentors, network with peers, and or find job opportunities. We actually did a recent poll on Hot Happy Mess's Instagram account. 82% of our followers use LinkedIn. 78% do it occasionally. 22% said they were on LinkedIn 24/7. So I am curious to know, Lauren, from your perspective, your expert opinion, why is utilizing LinkedIn a must do? And what shouldn't we do on it? Dating website, personal updates, et cetera.
Yeah. So I will just give you this from the recruiter's point of view. If you are not on LinkedIn, you are absolutely missing out on the opportunity of a job actually landing in your inbox. So, you know, your parents told you job's not going to knock on your door. It can knock on your inbox if you are on LinkedIn because most recruiters, and I don't have a stat in front of me, but most recruiters use LinkedIn has a tool for recruiters that we use in order to source and find talent. So if you don't have a LinkedIn profile, you're never going to show up. So that goes back to the you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. If you have a profile on LinkedIn and we are able to find you, which goes back to the next point, is that you have to optimize your LinkedIn profile. Just having a profile, but not ever looking at it, never updating it, not giving it any care is pretty much the equivalent of not having one at all. Because the way it works for recruiters is we are able to put in keywords and a bunch of other things for what we're looking for, and then LinkedIn will serve us the profiles. So you really wanna be staying up to date with your LinkedIn, and you wanna be letting us know who you are, what are your skills, throw in those keywords, write that summary, have the professional photo, make sure that your contact information is easy to find, because we might be able to contact you that way. Or if you do apply online and we're looking at your resume, most of the time before we take that pile of 10 resumes and narrow it down to maybe 4 that we're going to show the hiring manager, we're going to also check your LinkedIn profile. So those things I always tell people, I'm like, you have to think of your resume is this like super tailored description of what you've done that applies to the job and the company. And your LinkedIn can be really like your professional history and kind of your professional brand. And you don't want those things to be having an identity crisis, aka this mm-hmm. thing says one thing and that thing says another. But for people who think that LinkedIn is just some weird, like, older person's networking tool, it's not. Recruiters use it. And we can even, let's say I love your profile and I'm like, ooh, I'm not hiring for that role right now, but I might need to hire for it in the future. I can put you in a folder that I can save and then I can reach out to you later. So you need to not just think about LinkedIn as a place where people are going to maybe learn more about you, but you need to realize that it's the way that if you optimize your profile and you do it correctly, a job can land in your inbox. And that yep. sounds pretty cool to me.
Yeah. Sign me up for that. If I don't have to leave the house to find the job, it just kind of finds me. To piggyback on that and expand on it, Leticia, when it comes to, you know, upgrading our LinkedIn profiles, now more than ever, sort of branding oneself, one, just as a brand period, personal branding is more important than ever in this day and age. And it's something I've always been passionate about. Branding oneself as a thought leader mm-hmm. or an expert when it comes to subject matter really helps to move the needle. Even in my industry, sometimes it's like, oh, yeah. we want to cast you to host this show or whatever, but are you a thought leader in this space? What would you say live when it comes to commentary? Do you know anything about cooking before you hosted the show? Look at these articles I wrote about cooking. An article about cooking really quickly. Right. So I would love if you could speak to branding oneself as a thought leader. What should we be doing there when it comes to posting original content, sharing articles, et cetera? What steps should we take?
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about LinkedIn, which I think really makes it stand out amongst other social platforms, is just the reach and the visibility that you get. You know, on Instagram or other apps, you're kind of fighting with those algorithms. But on LinkedIn, if the right person shares it, then their network gets to see what you posted as well. So just speaking from my experience, one, I said, I want to be branded as a career and, you know, workplace expert. And so I started writing articles. The great thing about LinkedIn is that you can write your own articles as well. You can share
I didn't know
those.
That. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You can write, it's almost like your own blogs almost. So you can create and host your own blogs on your profile. I've written some articles around LinkedIn tips, what is a career coach? So whenever someone's like, well, what is a career coach? What do they do? And I'm like, gotcha. Here's the link. So it's been really cool for that. As well as just posting articles that are relevant to whatever your industry is talking about. I would also say connecting with other thought leaders in the industry as well, commenting on their posts, sharing their posts. I mean, now LinkedIn does so many things. You can even go live on LinkedIn. You can create your own branded newsletter on LinkedIn. But what I often tell folks if they're kind of just getting started is just be active, right? It is great to have a wonderful profile that's optimized, but you have to spend some time on there, even if it's just like 15 minutes a day during your lunch break, and just start posting articles, post, like ask questions, right? That you can also run polls on LinkedIn, but you do actually have to be active. And I think the great thing about branding is that you don't have to wait for permission to say, hey, you know what, Zuri, I think it's time for you to like really level up. Like we should all give ourselves permission to brand ourselves as we would like to, right? And with that being said, use LinkedIn as a platform to continuously educate, inspire, empower, and just start the conversation and dialogue. And then you'll get more confident and comfortable with using the platform over time.
I love it. Really great tips. I would love to talk about managing up. And that's because, full disclosure, I'm so bad at it. I am like, when I was younger, I like couldn't even make, don't be my boss. Don't be my supervisor. You will not even know I work for the company. Like, I'm just like, all right, here comes a person that like employs me. And I like beeline for the opposite direction. I have no idea why. Me and my therapist should probably unpack that. But there's something to be said for managing up. And some people are really good at it. And others, myself included, not so much. So, Lauren, if you could speak to why managing up is important and also how we do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first I will say that some people are only managing up and they don't manage, you know, across or down at all. Yeah. So, you know, pat yourself on the back that you're probably doing two out of the three items, but, managing up is really important because those are the people who have influence probably over some of the career opportunities that come your way. they don't know what they don't know. So you need to be able to communicate to them who you are, what's your expertise, what do you want them to know you as? And I think of it as like, if your boss or someone asked your boss, like, who's Zuri, how would they describe you in one sentence, right? So it's your job to take that and kind of elaborate on it. One of the things that I think people do is they think, oh, I'll just keep my head down and my boss will recognize all the great work I'm doing. No. There's this, these researchers even coined a term for this. It's called the tiara syndrome, where they think it's like, and women are especially guilty of this, where we keep our head down, we work really hard, and we think someone's just going to come and plant the tiara, aka the promotion, on our head.
Yes. That was my syndrome for the first 10 years of my career.
Yes. And we're hardwired to have that. This is like, we can unpack that later. But the point about managing up is that you need to be communicating all the amazing things that you're doing. So I, like, one of the quick things that I would do, especially in this digital age, because you used to be able to maybe like actually see your boss and talk to your boss and have the hallway conversations. And we're probably not having as much of that right now. So I'm a big fan of sending the Monday and Friday email. So on the Monday email, and these are like no need to respond type emails, because you're not trying to add another task to your boss's plate, but you do want them to have visibility into what you're doing and all the amazing work you're doing. So on Monday, I might tell my boss, here are my priorities this week. Here's what I got done last week, or, you know, kind of basically an email of like, here's what's up on deck. Here's how it relates to the goals that I have. Let me know if any of this, you know, if you want to talk about any of this, but otherwise there's no need to respond. And then on Friday, you would basically touch base with them and let them know like, hey, based on the things I set out to do on Monday, here were the top priority items. Here were the like mid-tier priority items. And here's where things stand with that. I like having these basically like, ongoing communication and with the person, because one, it's really nice for you to have the digital copy yourself for when you do want to talk about that promotion or whatever it is that you want. But once you create that habit and you let your boss know like, hey, I think a really helpful way for us to stay in touch and for you to know what I'm working on and how it relates to the overall goals is I'll just email you every Monday and Friday. There's no need to respond. It's not another thing for you to do, but that way you'll have an idea. And if at any point what I'm focused on is not aligned with the goals of the company, you just let me know and I'll change gears or we can discuss it. And too many people do the thing where they just keep their head down. They assume no news is good news and like, hey, they're not saying anything to me. But if you're not working on the stuff that matters to the people who have the ability to influence your career, you're missing out. So for example, you might be working on topic or, you know, project XYZ, but right now the company's in crisis mode and they don't even care about that anymore. You should be saying to them, especially like when COVID hit, I was giving this advice a lot. It's like, what is the most important thing to your company right now? And how can you play a role in that kind of stuff? So managing up is all about how do you work and build relationships with the people who have the ability to influence your career? And then how do you do it? Communication, staying in touch, not assuming that they just know all the amazing stuff you're doing. And I think the key here is to be consistent with the following up, not once a year, not right before you need a promotion, not when you need something.
Leticia, what would you add as far as keeping things we should keep in mind when trying to manage up? For don't run in the opposite direction when your boss is in the hall. I learned that at probably 28.
Oh my gosh. I love everything that Lauren said. I mean, I think one, just because someone is in a management role doesn't mean that they're an effective manager. And so I do think that is important.
Facts.
It's just the facts, right? And so that's why I think it is important for us to effectively manage up. I encourage my clients to set up recurring one-on-ones with their boss if they can, and to actually run those meetings, have an agenda, share what you're working on, ask them what they're working on. What is their vision? What are their priorities? What has changed so that you can understand how to really support them? At the end of the day, a big piece of your job is to make your boss look good. And so, you know, you want to make sure that you are doing that and asking for feedback regularly. And I think this is really important, especially for women of color, because sometimes we don't often get that sponsorship. We don't get that really honest feedback that we deserve. So set up recurring one-on-ones. Send them an agenda, follow up after the meetings, right? Like CYA, put everything in an email so that you have something to reference and go back to, especially if you want to get promoted. I mean, to Lauren's point, you don't want to set up a meeting a week before, like the promotion time comes and you're like, hey, just checking in. Am I getting promoted? If you don't know by that time, it's probably too late and you don't want to show up in these conversations with surprises, right? That conversation literally should start at least like 6 to 9 months in advance at minimum.
Yeah. And I love what you mentioned about like the emails and taking the notes because, whoo, y'all, I love a paper trail.
Yes.
A paper trail. Me too. Because, you know, early on in my career, I was very much like a keep your head down, do the work. And I realized quickly, not everyone has the same ethos as I do. And your company culture often dictates whether or not what your core values are prioritized or whether they don't care. And you can either find a company that agrees with you or get on board with the fact that you might have to make a little bit more noise than you care to make. And one thing that I realized is, to your point, Leticia, it's easy once you show up at the meeting and it's time to re-up your contract or get the promotion. Well, I did this and this and this. But it's much more solid when you can say, if you refer to these emails from March, you'll see I did that awesome pitch. That ended up going to series, in August, this happened. I actually have these really great emails from so-and-so saying how awesome I did with that job. Just concrete evidence, because people forget things very quickly. And particularly when you're managing up, your bosses have 1,000 things on their mind and it's often not intentional. But if they're going to be taking my word for it, I'd much rather have a little something to back that up. Before we get into social media to kind of wrap things up, we've talked about managing up. I want to talk about, sort of building relationship across the platform, right? There's this awesome quote from Issa Rae in a clip of a News One interview. She said that we shouldn't necessarily aim to network up. We should be networking across. She said, who's next to you? Who's struggling? Who's in the trenches with you? Who's just as hungry as you are? And those are the people that you need to build with. Leticia, would you agree with that sentiment?
Absolutely. I mean, I was just over here thinking about, like, I have that thought often, because now I'm like over 10 years out of, you know, or in the workforce, 10 plus years. And a lot of my friends now are chief of staff. They're in chief talent roles. And I'm like, great. Now, like, you can refer me and I can work for your organization. And sometimes we don't often think about that. Like, the people that we associate with that are close to our age, our experience, are really doing some dope things. And I think there's power in community and finding those safe spaces and people that we can call on and use as a resource. It's so funny because one of my clients that I just landed over the last week or so, a guy I actually went to high school with, he runs their community, and he messaged me on LinkedIn. He's like, hey, you're going to be working with my company. And I'm like, well, I haven't seen you since high school. And so you just never know where people will end up and where those relationships could possibly take you. And so I'm a huge advocate of, you know, like building with the people that are close to you.
Yeah. Lauren, anything you would add to that?
I agree with all of that. I just have one networking rule that kind of relies on or applies to this, which is I call it the double opt-in. It was something I talked about in my book, because I think when you are doing like peer networking or horizontal networking, it is fantastic. But oftentimes what will happen is people will say, oh, can you intro me to this person? Can you intro me to that person? And one thing I want everyone to remember is that before you just say, yep, I'll share an email and make it Leticia's problem after that, like they have to connect or whatever, the double opt-in, meaning if Zuri says, I really want an introduction to Leticia, even though I know Leticia really well and I'm sure she would say yes, don't just connect them. First, you go to Leticia and say, hey, Zuri really wants to talk to you about XYZ. I know, because when you're building your network and you are, you know, spending time investing in these relationships, you don't want to just throw it all away by, you know, throwing a bunch of introductions into their inbox, because one, it might not be successful. They might not be ready for it. Leticia might say, I would love to meet with Zuri, but I can't do it for another 6 months. Can we circle back on this? In 6 months, when they have the connection, it's going to be much more successful and you're going to look great. Not to mention, you should really respect people's time and inboxes and lives right now. And so I agree with everything about the peer networking. I think sometimes when people think about their peers, they are much more quick to kind of like make those quick actions. Whereas like, if, you know, if it was an introduction to Issa Rae, you'd be like, well, I really need to save my introduction.
Let's think about this.
I only have so many people. Yeah. And it's like, no, you should treat every person you're networking with the same amount of respect, which is have them both opt into wanting to meet each other, then do the introduction on email. You will be known as a very respectful networker, and more people will want to have you as someone that they are friends with and have a relationship with, because they know that when you say I'll make an introduction, it's the real deal too.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, before we pivot into sort of the social media branding, the elevator pitch to wrap things up, I just want to throw out really quickly that, you know, we were talking about LinkedIn, and similar to other social networks like Facebook and Reddit, LinkedIn has a bunch of industry related groups that are niched down message boards, you know, like groups for veterans, animal lovers, graphic designers, et cetera. And LinkedIn groups is a thing. So we just want to throw out that that could be a really great tool to network, collaborate with like-minded people. Our intern, Jasmine, actually, she's a college student and she's a member of the Young Entertainment Professionals group. And so now she's clued into, you know, virtual events that are taking place, and she's able to connect with tons of people that she also now considers friends, which is also just a nice thing to have. People in the industry who sometimes you're not looking to gain, you know, professionally, you just need someone to talk shop with or talk shit with, quite frankly, over brunch, because you guys both get it because you're in that world. So I'd also encourage the LinkedIn groups. As we close out today's episode, I want to talk a little bit about social media. When it comes to the do's and don'ts of personal branding online, what to share, what not to share, what is one thing you would encourage people to keep in mind and one thing that you would discourage people from doing when it comes to social media, networking, and branding oneself?
I mean, I would just remind people, like, if it's on the internet, we can find it forever, you know, yes, like, oh God. So keep in mind, like, you know, whatever you're going to put on there, are you comfortable with that being something that is out there forever? You know, I think Facebook started when I had first started college, and I'm so thankful it wasn't around before that, because I think of these people who have had Facebook their whole lives, and, you know, anyway, so remember that. I think also things to have is have an elevator pitch. It doesn't have to always be like what you do. And I think this is a very American thing where the second question we always ask people is like, well, what do you do? What do you do for a living? You know, be okay with, it doesn't always have to be, I am defined by my job title and my company. You can be like, hey, I'm a really curious person, and wherever I use my curiosity drives whatever company I go to, whatever. There's your pitch. Or, you know, I'm a project manager at this thing, but truly what drives me the most is curiosity to solve problems. Great. There's your pitch, you know? So have an elevator pitch, and I just want to encourage people to not always feel like their career is their identity. So you think that you can also have some other things to define you too.
And I love that part about career not being identity, because for the longest that was the case for me. And
yeah,
I was like,
most of us are.
They'd be like, okay, so that's what you do. Who are you? And I was like,
exactly.
Well, I just told you, I'm a TV host. Cool.
Like, awesome. Do you have a hobby?
What do you do for fun?
What? Yeah.
I think about the next show I'm going to host. Like, what are you all up in my grill for? And then I'm like, you know what? I should probably like get my life together and have hobbies. So that's what Hot Happy Mess is all about, is building up all the other pillars of our lives too for that balance. Tisha, I would love to hear your perspective on this just a bit. Obviously, particularly because of your work dedicated to women of color and Black women in this space, microaggressions, it's a thing. It's a thing that any woman of color has certainly experienced. Women of any background have experienced when it comes to being a woman in the workplace. And I want to talk about that just briefly. Yeah. You know, microaggressions, for those who might be unfamiliar with the definition, it's indirect, it's subtle or unintentional discrimination against members of an historically excluded ethnic or racial group. You know, misogyny, when we're talking just women in general, the dislike of, the contempt for, or ingrained prejudice against women. We have all experienced that, I have no doubt. And according to Forbes, hiring managers and companies tend to have a subconscious bias hiring people who are just like them. Forbes says unconscious bias toward people who are of the same race, education level, economic status, and have the same personality, fears, or values influences who you hire much more than you think. And that's the tricky part to me, is the subconscious bias. When you don't even know you, it's one thing to be intentionally racist or prejudiced and double down on that, you're a douchebag, work on yourself. But when you don't even realize what you're doing, it's hard for the person on the other end of that microaggression to articulate or stand up for themselves or say, hey, I'm going to push back here, because the person on the other side genuinely, not to excuse the behavior, but is like, no, I think you're wrong here, essentially gaslighting the person who's on the receiving end. So Leticia, I'd love if you could speak to that when it comes to microaggressions in the workplace. How can particularly women of color and Black women navigate that? Are there resources? Are there strategies you recommend?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I could talk about this all day. Microaggressions, micro insults, micro assaults. They feel like these little, like, I don't know, like these little hits, right? And over time, it could really have us feeling as though we don't belong, we're not valued, that we're not seen for who we are. I think the bias you were just speaking to, Zuri, is affinity bias. And I remember in my recruiting days, one thing that I used to hear all the time that would grind my gears is, oh, this person is just like me when I was younger. We definitely have to hire this person, right? And that is definitely rooted in affinity bias. And it does exclude those marginalized groups, particularly people of color. When it comes to microaggressions, I am all about approaching these things. And I don't think that, I think I would approach this as a conversation and not a confrontation. And I think sometimes we think, okay, if I address someone, it's going to turn into an argument. But I think when it comes to microaggressions, you know, you have to figure out if it is worth addressing or not, especially if you're noticing that this is happening again and again and again. But I think in order to, one, not allow that resentment to build up over time, one thing that I've recognized that a lot of my clients or the women in my community have experienced is that these microaggressions keep happening and keep happening. Then by the time you know it, they are just feeling super uncomfortable at work. They're feeling very unsafe. And I think if we don't address these things head on, we start to build this resentment up over time. And that resentment can start to affect your productivity, your sense of belonging and safety. And so I definitely recommend addressing it and leading these going into these conversations by, one, stating intent, giving someone the benefit of the doubt, and then also just teaching people how to treat you, right? And so when it comes to having these conversations, it could be as simple, hey, I just wanted to chat with you about this conversation. This is what was said. This is how I felt. So using those I statements, I'm not sure that it was intended this way, right? But this is how it came across. And I just want to make sure that, you know, moving forward, like, hopefully this won't happen again, right? And I think that the way we address it is super, super key. Leading conversations like this with curiosity over judgment, and let's assume like maybe they didn't realize that they said it. But again, if we don't say anything, we just never know. Another thing with addressing microaggressions is that you don't want to wait weeks or months to address it, right? If you're bringing up something that happened 3 months ago and you're going to that person, they're like, what? This was that small thing. You're bringing this up now. Right. So I think you do have to be mindful of that timeline and how long you wait. And then I think in terms of resources, it is so important for us to have safe spaces outside of work, right? That's why I created my community, because for some of us, we don't have that. So tapping into a community, finding people that will pour into us, finding people that will see us and that will affirm us. And we also have to make sure we are affirming ourselves as well. So those are my tips on microaggressions.
Really great advice. Thank you so much for that. Lauren, this podcast is for all millennial women. At the end of the day, we come from different career backgrounds. Some are in corporate, nonprofit, freelancers, entrepreneurs, mompreneurs, et cetera. But one thing that we all have in common is that more than likely, we may work in a male-dominated industry. You know, we get tasked for being too much. When I first came up with the concept of alpha babe, it was sort of to reclaim the word alpha and stop making it a bad thing. Like, I was sick of hearing, oh my God, you are so alpha, like good luck getting a man and this and that. Like, I wanted to be able to embrace that side of me that so often men were intimidated by, weak men, to be clear. But intimidated nonetheless. We get tasked for being too much. In Career Contessa, you have an awesome article called Six Dirty Words for Ambitious Women that lists these words: ambitious, opinionated, direct, controversial, pushy, and sassy. Your article also states that women of color can never be as direct in communications as their white counterparts, and they often report not speaking up or retyping emails to appear more friendly and likable. So I would love to hear your perspective on women in these male-dominated industries. Is there anything to keep in mind, any words of encouragement or tips you give when it comes to owning our power and not really dimming our light to make other people feel comfortable instead of intimidated by the fact that we are, in fact, strong women?
Yeah. So first, I just want to say that article is written by Sierra Graham, and she's an amazing writer on Career Contessa, and you guys should read every article that she writes. She actually just wrote one the other day that was about why Black women need spaces that are only for them. And it's just like everything she writes, she's saying what we're all thinking, and it's all written from her point of view. And she wrote about the ambitious words, and she's absolutely right. You can, you know, if a guy does something, he's seen as being assertive. If we do it, we're an aggressive bitch. And if you're a woman of color, you are an angry Black woman, right? Like it just like the tears of all how it all unfolds. Look, I think there are some things getting better, just the fact that there's more education about this. But the bottom line is that most likely you work in a workplace where you, I'm just going to go on a limb and say, you probably don't feel like you can be 100% your authentic self. You are trying to think about, okay, well, what is that person thinking about me? Well, no one in the workplace, you know, does this. And they totally ignored the fact that I'm going through this trauma of this event that's happening in the world, whatever. The point is that we bring our human self to work. And so workplaces really do need to mold and become places where we embrace people's differences. And for example, for women, just because I don't do it maybe the way he would do it, doesn't make my way any worse or make me not the, you know, the right person for the job. And I think this all goes back to companies need to focus less on culture fit and more on value fit. Define what your values are as a company and organization, and then invest in the education and the training to help your employees and your managers and everybody know these are our values. So for example, if one of your values is that we want everyone to feel included or inclusivity, then in the meeting, when a woman is spoken over or interrupted, you know, if you keep hounding in, those are our values, and you don't just put them on paper, but you actually live them, then the manager goes, you know what? She's not done speaking. Let's listen to what she is saying. And I guarantee that happens one time to one man. And then he's so embarrassed that he did that because he realizes, oh my God, I'm that person, that then they're more careful about it in the future, right? And I think to Leticia's point, you know, going through from a place of I'm not going to come at you with this. It's not judgment. It's more curiosity. I'm here to like let you know, hey, in that meeting, you know, you spoke over me and I wasn't done making my point. Another thing that I think about though is like, okay, what could I have done differently, right? Like I only have control over my own actions, but one of the actions I have is that I should let that person know, you know what, you spoke over me. I wasn't done with the point that I was making. I would really love it if next time I can finish, but also maybe I wasn't concise enough with the point or something, you know? And so I'm not saying like you have to qualify. I'm just commenting that sometimes with this advice, especially the advice about interruptions, sometimes there's only like, you hear one part of the advice. I used to say this about asking for a raise, where then everybody was asking for a raise, but there was like this whole other page of the advice that was like, you know, come with, you know, what have you accomplished? What are you asking for? And so I'm always careful not to give blanket advice about like, men are the worst and you can't work with them. We can all figure out.
Like
here's the thing. It's hard to work with people, right? It's hard to like, there's so many things developed in it, and it comes down to good communication skills, setting your boundaries, you know, kind of like with the microaggression thing, like don't let it go on. And then 3 months later you bring this on. Like most of the stuff I see at Career Contessa, whether it's men or women, is that it comes down to interpersonal communication skills and like a human piece of stuff that people either assume is there or they ignore it, or, you know, empathy, you know, having some empathy for the fact that we all just lived through a pandemic, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. Really great advice. Y'all, I could speak with you forever about this. This episode has been so jam-packed with information. I can't wait for our listeners to listen. If people want to keep up with you, I have 1,000 more questions, but I'm not even going to do it to y'all. I'm not even going to do it. So if people want to keep up with you or ask you some of the questions, maybe learn a little bit more, not slide in the DMs, like, can you tell me your life story? maybe they want to book a session with you, Leticia, or check out some of the awesome articles that people like Sierra are writing on Career Contessa. Where can they keep up with y'all? Lauren?
At Career Contessa everywhere. And the book is Power Moves. So there you go.
LaTeshaBird.com. Find me on IG, Twitter, at Latesha_Burr. Super active on Twitter. So that's where you can find me.
And that's Bird, B-Y-R-D, y'all. Just, yes. I always like to spell it out for people looking. All right, Lauren, LaTeshia, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your gems, your expertise. I know this is going to move the needle for some people listening today at home. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Happy.
Yes.
Thank you again so much to our amazing experts today for breaking down networking. I'm already feeling less like a stalker. I don't know about you. Now, before we head out, I want to share with you a really quick iTunes review from a lovely listener. It warmed my heart. Horror New 2015, story of my life. It's like Zuri is watching my life from a bird's eye view. Speaking of stalkers, that was me, not her saying that. Giving me all the advice I've been searching for episode by episode. I got my self-love, self-care together, my relationships, getting my pockets together, and it's just a coincidence, it's house buying time. We'll keep listening and keep bettering ourselves. Horror New 2015, thank you so much for taking the time to leave a review. Also, I assumed that you're a woman. I have no idea. So my bad for making that assumption. But whoever you are, Horror New 2015, thank you. I appreciate that. Remember, y'all, leave a review on iTunes. It's free and it's the easiest way to support Hot Happy Mess. It shows that people are vibing and it helps grow our podcast. Okay. So don't forget, there's a $100 Amazon gift card on the line this episode around. If you enter before July 19th, go right now, leave a quick 5-star review. Go to Apple Podcasts, type in Hot Happy Mess, scroll down, write the review. Okay. Super quick. Easy peasy. P.S. We are going to be wrapping up the career and finance series pretty soon here and transitioning into a topic I love so much. And it's one that we talk about often. And I know y'all are ready for it. Wellness. It's going to be great. We are dipping our toe into the mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, community stuff. It's going to be fun, okay? I was laughing at one of my friend's memes he posted, and there was this like quote like, "Hot girl summer, how about healed girl summer?" And his caption was, "I hate shit like this," which is so funny and also so true. It's like, just can we live? Can y'all just let everybody be great, the hot girls and the healed girls? Anyways, we're tapping in to our inner self. We're going to maximize hot girl summer by doing a little bit of hot girl, a little bit of healed girl, a little bit of everything, okay? Because that's what Hot Happy Mess is all about. Duality. We are embracing all of the sides, okay? All right, that's it. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, follow me on Instagram at Zuri Hall, Z-U-R-I-H-A-L-L, and at Hot Happy Mess. Slide in my DMs, at me. Talk to me. I love talking back. And I'll see you next week. Bye.